Hi, welcome to another episode of Hugh Scoggins, the International Law Podcast. In today's episode, we'll delve into an in-depth discussion about the Hague Academy of International Law's diploma, with a special focus on the directed studies and the diploma exam. Joining us are two recent awardees from 2022 of the Distinguished Hague Academy Diploma, who will share their valuable insights and personal experiences of successfully obtaining this prestigious diploma. I'm sure this discussion will be quite useful for a number of our listeners, especially young international law practitioners and scholars that may be thinking about applying for the directed studies. First, we have Cécile Goubeau-Larec, who is a PhD student at Paris Panthéon Assas University and a research assistant at the University of Montpellier. Cécile was awarded the Public International Law Diploma and undertook the diploma exam in French. And next up, we have Madeleine Patterson-Weiner, who is a PhD candidate and a research fellow at the Heidelberg University. Madeleine was awarded the Private International Law Diploma in 2022, and she sat for the exam in English. Thank you both for joining us. I'll ask you both to jump in whenever you feel like there's something you'd like to add. Of course, I'll direct the question specifically to one or both of you as things progress. But just to kick things off, Madeleine, could you give us an overview of the Hague Academy of International Law and the diploma? I'm hopeful that our listeners will also visit the website, but just to sort of set a context for the discussion, I thought that might be a good question to start with.
Sure, absolutely. So I'll give it my very best, but also in the beginning of the lectures of the summer course, there's always a long introduction by Professor Thuvenin, the Secretary General, and it's also, you know, most helpful and has a lot more details than I could probably provide in this short period of time. But yeah, so my understanding is that the Hague Academy of International Law was founded in 1923. So it celebrated its 100th anniversary this year, which is actually incredible. And prior to its creation, there were several ideas of just creating an institution for the teaching and the promotion of international law subjects to an international community. And I think what really got the ball rolling was Tobias Asa, a really world renowned international law scholar who at the time received the Nobel Peace Prize. And then with the help of the Carnegie Foundation, the Hague Academy was finally created. And its goal pretty much is, as I said, to promote international law teaching and expertise. And it even has in its founding articles, I believe, and which is also important for the diploma exam later, that there is this goal of creating a public international law and a private international law combination. So whichever session is in progress, there's always wide overreach of sort of the two shared subjects. And what it has done since is that there's always a summer course with 3 weeks of public international law teaching with really world-renowned scholars, judges, practitioners, anything. I'm sure Cécile can talk about that part, and then also followed by 3 weeks of private international law. Again, incredible scholars and practitioners in the field. So it really gives you a really interesting variety of what's going on in the international law community. And then as for the diploma, if I'm correct, it has been set up pretty much with the Hague Academy of International Law itself. And the idea is to give the people who participate the opportunity to sort of distinguish themselves from this large cohort, which usually consists of over 300 students each year. I think I looked it up and the initial cohort was something like 350 students or so. And so the diploma is a way of sort of taking one or two students who have deepened their knowledge, be it over the course of those 3 weeks or just their general studies and award the student who best performed both in a written and in an oral exam. And one part that's particularly important is that you have to be nominated in order to sit for the diploma. And it's only awarded to something like one or two students each year, although I do know of some years in which the diploma hasn't been awarded to anyone at all because it's just incredibly demanding. Without wanting to dwell on that too much, because obviously Cecile and I received it, but yeah, maybe this just as a quick start.
Thanks for that detailed answer, Madeline. I'll turn it over to you, Cecile. So before we go on to the crux of the discussion, which is, of course, the directed studies and part of the general courses, there is an application process for the scholarship, which in some ways overlaps with the application you make for the directed studies. Now, the requirements in terms of documents that you need to submit are, of course, laid out on the website. But there is that one particular component, which is the short letter giving reasons for the application, which, of course, if you're applying to the scholarship, it needs to talk about the scholarship. But if you're applying to the directed studies, it needs to also talk about that. So I'll turn it over to you to sort of give your input and insights on what you think might make such a letter stand out.
First of all, there are two different applications to make, the one for the scholarship and the one for the directed studies. And so obviously the letter that you write has to be focused on either or both of the scholarship and the directed studies. Because when you ask for the scholarship, basically you are asking for the scholarship to take part in the course in general. So basically the reasons that you need to put forward are the reasons why you want to take part in the courses of that year. So I remember that while I was writing my letter, the two main questions I asked myself were, the first one, why do I want, as a general question, to take part in the public international law courses of the Hague Academy? And the second question was, why do I want to take part in the courses of that year? Because every year there is a theme. And I remember that the theme of the public international law course of my year was democracy in international law. And obviously, there is a link between the general courses that you follow in the morning and the directed study seminars that you're going to follow in the afternoon. So you can also put some words in your letter about why you want to take part in the courses of that year on, for example, democracy, because you want to put things forward in terms of research and understanding of a certain topic. And that also applies with wanting to take part in the directed studies. But for the scholarship application, I do believe that it's very much, and it should very much be focused on why do you want to take part in the courses in general. While for the directed studies, it's a bit more particular, because when you apply for the directed studies, I do believe that there are also some questions that need to be answered and that I tried to answer in my letter, but that I'm very peculiar to what the directed studies are, because you need to be interested in the format of the directed studies, first of all, because it's a very peculiar format. You have approximately two seminars a week for 3 weeks, and there are in-depth seminars, so you actually be I mean, and you need to be willing to put in the effort because otherwise it's not going to be interesting for you. You're not going to be able to follow what's being discussed during the seminars, and it might also be detrimental to the other people being in the seminar because it's actually a group project kind of that you are working on during the sessions. By project, I mean a kind of thinking project, because every session is kind of a big question that is asked and you answer with different points of views, and basically everybody comes in the seminar to give their analysis and you confront those analysis to build up your own, you know, point of view, legal point of view in a question. And you'd not only need to be explaining why you're willing to put in the effort, but also why you think that you are able to put in the effort. By this, I mean, in the letter of the Directed Studies, I believe that a very key point is why not only you have an interest that is personal or professional in taking it part in the Directed Studies, but also why what you've already done in international law allows you to be able to have the level of legal knowledge that is required to take part in the Directed Studies.
Thank you, Cecile, for the answer. Now, turning to you, Madeline, starting with the general courses, could you give us a sense of what they look like? So Cecile has already touched upon, you know, the thematic aspect of it. So in addition to that, could you shed some light on, for example, what is the level of interaction with the lecturers, you know, any preparation that might be needed in advance? How time consuming is it on a day-to-day basis when you're there for the 3 weeks? So just to give our listeners sort of a broad overview on what they're basically signing up for when we speak about the general courses.
Sure. So in my year, the general course was taught by Professor Louis Davout, and the topic was towards, you know, so sort of worldwide law consistency. So it was, the subject itself is necessarily broad because it's going to be running for 2 weeks, and then it's also going to be in session every single day. So I think for us it was, it varied, but it was either before noon or after, if I remember correctly. And the lecture style itself wasn't necessarily too interactive. It was just very, and, you know, it was incredibly interesting and very, very dense, but it wouldn't have allowed for a higher level of interaction. And I think that also wasn't that much what the Academy had in mind, because the way it works is you have the general courses and some of the special courses. And then there's also seminars that you can go to if you're interested to deepen your knowledge in that one class. So that's where you can go ask questions. You can always also do that after the class, but the class itself is really meant to sort of give you an overview and deepen your knowledge in general in private international law. And the way Professor Davout conducted it was sort of to take this general subject and show particular instances, particular cases from European and international courts, from model laws, to sort of highlight particular parts or facets of private international law, sort of from a dogmatic point of view. So that was really interesting. And in order to follow his arguments, it was recommended that you do some reading ahead of the class. So he would either recommend reading a particular case or an extract from an encyclopedia in private international law or so, or an essay or an article or anything like that. And of course, I mean, his explaining was such that you could also follow the class without necessarily having read every detail, but as with anything, you're going to get so much more out of it if you look through it beforehand. And in the beginning, there's this platform where they upload all the documents. And when I first saw all the documents, I felt like I had been hit by a bus because it was just so many. So it's going to happen. You're going to be a little bit in shock. But how I decided to go through it was just beforehand, before I went to The Hague, skim through some of the things that I found interesting that sort of intrigued me. And then before the classes took place, so like the night before, the day before, read the assigned readings that I knew he was going to talk about the next day. So I think that really helped me have them sort of fresh on my mind before I go into that class and assure that I was going to get the most out of it. Yeah.
Cecile, along similar lines, I know you've already touched upon sort of what the directed studies look like, but if there's anything else that you'd like to add on top of that, and in addition, because you've already touched upon it, and to sort of get your input on another question, which is your advice as far as the timing of applying to the directed studies is concerned. Now, as I understand, you can only sit for the directed studies once. And if you clear the written exam and go proceed to the oral exam, you can sit for it twice. So for some, it might be a crucial question on when, you know, they should in principle apply, knowing that, you know, you only get one shot, or in certain circumstances two. So just to put those questions together, the overview of the directed studies and the timing as far as applying to the directed studies is concerned.
So if I remember well, you have two ways of getting in the directed studies. The most traditional ways is applying for the directed studies in the, I think you have until the end of December of the year prior to the year your courses are going to take place in. So my course was in 2022, and I remember applying in December 2021. And if you do not apply in that time frame, you always have the possibility of showing up on the first day at the 1 hour exam that takes place to kind of evaluate the level of knowledge of international law of everyone who has been accepted in the directed studies, and everyone else who wants to take part in the directed studies. So you don't actually need to apply for the directed studies in December of the year before to be able to take part in the directed studies. Now, I don't think that there is, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that there is a limited number of times when you can take part in the directed studies. I mean, you can attend the courses every year and every year take part in the directed studies. But there is a limited number of times where you can sit the exam. And if I'm not wrong, if you sit the written exam and not proceed to the oral phase, you can try a second time sitting the written exam during another session. But if you sit the written exam and then proceed to the oral exam and fail the oral exam, then you cannot sit the written exam a second time. And basically your chance has passed. So I feel like when you are selected and chosen basically by the Director of Studies to take part in the written exam, you shouldn't be too scared of what you're going to write on that sheet of paper for 5 hours. Because whatever the outcome, either you go to the oral exam, either you try another year. But the real question is, if you get to the oral phase, I mean, if you do not make it in the oral phase, you don't have a second chance. And that might be a bit tricky. And I feel that there are a lot of factors to take into consideration. The first one is obviously the money that it costs, because if you want to try a second time, it means that you need to come back. And if you get a scholarship on the first time, you actually cannot apply for a scholarship the second time. So there might be cost incurred, but also maybe, you know, the professors who are there, because obviously the jury of the oral exams is made of Professor Tuve Nau, who is the Secretary General, as Madeleine said at the start of this podcast, but also the professor who taught the general course, and the two directors of studies, the director of studies for the French directed studies and for the English directed studies. And then the topic of the year, because the thing is, the exam is not, it's not a requirement, basically, that the exam topic will be on what you studied during the classes. But obviously what you studied during classes is kind of linked to the professor's research interests. And so if they're linked to the research interests of the professors, most of the time the professors will give you something to write on or sit your oral exam on that is something that is linked to their research interests. So yeah, you might have a look to those different factors to decide when you want to sit the exams.
Thanks, Cecile, for the answer and particularly for the clarification on when you can and cannot and how many times you can sit for the exam. Madeline, I don't know if you have any thoughts on, you know, the timing aspect of when one should apply for the directed studies as far as private international law is concerned. But in addition to that, so Cecile has already touched upon, you know, the format of the directed studies. But I don't know if you have anything else to add on the format and also on the timing of when one might think of applying to the directed studies.
So maybe as for the timing, we touched upon this briefly earlier. I do believe that there's not, you know, a set in stone perfect timing. And as Cecile rightly said, there are so many factors to take into account. But just from my personal experience, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't come to The Hague with the idea or the goal of coming home with a diploma. I had applied for the directed studies, and I, to a certain degree, it was also, you know, expected of me because this sort of 3 weeks was sponsored by my institute, and my boss and everyone had been really kind in providing me with the possibility of going there. So it was one of the conditions, basically, that I also take the directed studies. So when I was accepted, I was really glad and happy to participate because I had this, you know, interest in private international law. And I also thought, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, of course, I'm going to give it my all. But, you know, it wasn't like I went there with the idea of I'm going to get it. So I think the best time to do it is whenever it feels right. And, you know, another year or another two might not necessarily help you on the particular subject that going to be the question of that year. But then again, maybe an additional year of practical experience or, you know, reading a certain article or whatever it may be the winning insight into an exam argument or in an oral exam question. So it's really, what I want to say is it really is a gamble. And I think a big portion of it, without wanting to sound, you know, too like touchy-feely, is just the mindset of going in there. So I think it has helped me actually in that instance that I felt freed by not having to, you know that I get the diploma. So yeah, for me, it was the right time. Yeah, but I think whatever works for you, really. And then as for the format of the directed studies, yeah, really, Cecile really already touched upon this. It's just a really interesting and diverse format because what happens is it's really totally up to the professor directing it. And for me, that was Professor Marie Linton. And it was really interesting in that she kind of got us all together as a group. We were 14 different people from, I think, something like 11 jurisdictions or so. So every session we would talk about one subject. And before diving into all of the legal arguments, we would, first of all, just exchange views, but also exchange, you know, what's the status quo in each of our respective jurisdictions. And it was honestly mind-opening to me because from studying private international law in Germany, or even studying private international law in a, you know, studying it abroad, there is always this mindset from one particular jurisdiction, whichever you're sitting in, and one, you know, sort of cultural background that dictates the right or wrong answer. And so all of these really challenging, difficult legal and political questions, like how do we deal with child marriage, or how do we deal with climate change litigation, business and human rights violations from a private international law perspective, they were seen so differently, you know, depending on where we came from, or how should foreign law be treated before our courts? I mean, everybody had a different opinion on that, on how it was supposed to work. So that was, even just for that, that was such an interesting experience for me. And this also feeds back to what you said earlier, Cecile. If you don't have an interest in contributing to that, because this really all hinges on your willingness to contribute to the group's project's outcome, then you're really taking away someone's spot. So this is also just something to bear in mind. No, but it was really absolutely fascinating and really interesting because it was so diverse in the types of subjects that were dealt with.
Thank you, Madeline, for the answer. And before we get to the not so fun part, which is the exam and the strategies you took for the exams, I want to ask what the workload looked like, and particularly, you know, I understand the academy and arranges for a lot of visits and activities during the 3 weeks. And part of the social activities, of course, in any such course is, of course, the partying, which takes place. So to put my question in very simple terms, how hectic was it to do the directed studies alongside the general courses? And did it sort of hinder in any way your participation in any of the activities / partying that goes on in the evening? So I don't know who wants to take this one, but you know, I'll let you guys decide.
Okay, I can go first. So for me, taking part in the directed studies was not a hindrance to my social life there. And this was also part of my philosophy and part of why I believe it was successful ultimately, because you know, you're only there for 3 weeks. You don't know if it's going to work. The academy offers such a broad variety of things you can do. There's embassy visits, which was so much fun, so interesting. There's visits to some of the international institutions, of which there are so many in The Hague. I mean, for public international law, there's also the meeting with the judges, which is so fascinating. I was so jealous that they weren't able to do that, to recreate that for the private international law. But we had other things, and there's always this beach party, and you know, they're just giving it their all to create this really fun environment, student environment. And what you should really bear in mind when you go there is that this is probably the most international community you're ever going to be exposed to in this really dense 3 weeks time. And for me, it was incredibly important to make the connections that I have. And it has been so rewarding and so fun because with some of them, I'm still friends to this day, and we exchange like messages or visits. I know that some of my friends have even gone on holiday together, which is so sweet. And as we spoke about earlier, this private international law, or just international law community, is so small and close-knit that you're eventually going to run into people again, and it's just nice if you know them a little bit. So I would really advise you to make those connections, and you absolutely can do both. So the way I prepared was, because I just thought it made more sense for me, was to look at the subjects that were going to be covered the next day, and do the readings sort of the day before, but not prepare months in advance and risk sort of not knowing anymore what it was that I had read for the next session. And this has really worked for me. And I was able to participate in discussions and share my views. And if I were to do it again, this is probably also how I would go about it. And maybe one last thing that I found really interesting just about the types of people that you meet in The Hague is, not only is it incredibly diverse from sort of the nations that are represented there, but also from the positions that people hold. I mean, I was able to meet judges from other jurisdictions who took the directed studies with me, arbitrators, lawyers, obviously. Some of them were PhD candidates. Some of the people in my class were assistant professors. So it's just so interesting to have those connections and to know people from those universities. I mean, whatever it may be that you want to do in the future, it's just going to be really useful and fun to, you know, have a beer with one of the judges. So
thanks, Madeline. That sounds pretty cool. And Cecile, over to the not so cool part, which is the exams. We'll start with the day one mock exam. And if you could give us a sense of, and particularly if you remember the type of question that was asked in your session, just to give our listeners sort of a sense of what the mock exam looks like for public international law, followed, of course, by Madeline, who will hopefully tell us if she remembers about what she answered in the private international law part. But over to you, Cecile.
Well, so the 1 hour exam takes place on the first day of the courses, and it takes place at the end of the first day. And it's a very important point, because basically the first day of courses is kind of the most intense day, because you have the welcome speeches at the start of the day, and then you have the normal courses. And basically the day usually ends for regular students, by that I mean those who do not take part in the directed studies, around 1 p.m. And on that day, the day ends for everyone at 4 p.m. And you basically, everyone arrived very early on the day, around 7 or 8 a.m. to register. So you're basically very tired when the 1 hour exam happens. But it's only a 1 hour exam, and it's actually very, very short, because I remember that I expected having, you know, a question or just a topic that I should have to write on for an hour. And basically what we got was, I don't remember exactly what the subject was, but it was a gathering of three or four questions. So it was not only one question, it was three or four questions. And we had to write something, and we only had 3 pages. And I remember realizing at that moment that the challenge was a very simple one. It is that, as Madeline said, maybe 10 minutes ago, what makes the directed studies very interesting is that people come from different backgrounds. But there is also a reality that is, even if we think that the main difference between the French directed studies and the English directed studies is the language that is spoken, it is true, but it's not only the biggest difference. It's the fact that most of the time, the professor who teaches the French directed studies is a French professor. And there is a very French way of thinking about international public law. And so I realized that my biggest challenge in that 1 hour exam would be to find actually what the link between those four questions were, to find actually what should be the one question that was asked and was underlying the four questions that composed the subject that was given to us, and then find a plan to answer it. Because in French, the plan is, I mean, structuring your way of thinking is a very important part of the thinking process. And I remember that basically that is the moment when I realized that what the key was for the directed studies was being flexible, because I was not expecting that type of subject. I was not expecting having only 1 hour and 3 pages, because it's very short. And I did not expect actually having no guidance in the way, you know, of thinking about it, because we were completely free to take the subject from one angle or another. And that exam is actually made for one single reason. It's to assess whether those who have not been, I mean, already been accepted in the directed studies can take part in the directed studies, and to assess within those students who have already been accepted to take part in the directed studies, those who might have the potential to sit the exam. But it's not, you know, it's not, if you don't do your best in that 1 hour. It doesn't end your journey in the dietetic studies. You can always prove that you're much better than when you've shown in that 1 hour. But it's kind of a, you know, a kickoff for those 3 weeks.
Thanks, Cecile. Over to you, Madeline, for the private international law parts.
Sure. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. I was just trying to remember the question that we got on that mock exam, but it's too long ago. I don't remember exactly. It was something about recirculation, but not necessarily of judgments. It was something else. But anyway, I didn't feel like I did my best work there, and yet here I am. So maybe this would be all my message here. It was really unsatisfying to hand it in. I felt really stressed and very tired. As you said, it was this long day, and yet, I don't know, it was all okay in the end. And I, after talking to other people who sat for the mock exam, they said they felt the same way. So you get over it, and you realize that your time there is not ruined, and it's all good.
So turning to the 5 hour exam, I'll of course go through one by one, just like we've done on many of the questions. But just at this juncture, to point out that on the website you have questions from both the public international law and the private international law exams that have taken place in the past. So for those of our listeners who are curious about what type of questions might come up, I think that's a great place to start. But having said that, I'll hand it over to you, Madeline, first. So because Madeline's AirPods have given up, we'll start with Cecile, as Madeline sort of troubleshoots this issue. Cecile, what strategy, what strategy did you adopt to tackle the 5 hour question? What sort of did you have in mind going into the exam, and did your sort of, you know, expectations differ in any way once you actually sat for the exam? What was some of the thinking process behind, you know, writing that 5 hour exam? You already mentioned that, you know, in the French way of writing, you know, planning and structuring the answer is something very important. So if you could just give a sense of how you approached the entire thing in terms of strategy, but also how you answered it and sort of any thinking that went behind it.
Sure. I mean, I prepared it in a very traditional way. So it was kind of a two-step approach. The first step was actually before coming to the Hague Academy, I thought about sitting the exam. So Madeleine said that she was more of a, I'll try it and I'll see what, you know, what opportunity I get. For me, I went also with a free spirit, just taking all I could take. But I prepared in advance because for me, when you get the scholarship application, you cannot ask for it a second time. So I knew basically that it was my only time coming to the academy because I just could not afford it a second time. And so I prepared a bit in advance. And for this, before coming to the Hague Academy, so I obviously prepared for the directed studies on the basis of the syllabus they sent us. But I also prepared by just, you know, reading a textbook of public international law. So basically, I came back to the basics of international law just to make sure that, you know, my mind was fresh and I had a full overview of what international law was. Because although, you know, most of the things are obvious when you heard of them, they might not come up to your mind directly when you need them. So that was the first step. And the second step is actually a very usual step, but I went through past papers. So I went on the website, as you mentioned Cheyenne. But at the time, I remember when I was preparing for the exam, the past exam subjects were kind of all in the same format. So they were dissertation topics. It was usually a sentence or just, you know, a phrase. and you had to write about it for 5 hours. And I remember sitting my 5 hour exam and being a bit, you know, disturbed by the fact that my subject was not a dissertation subject. It was a bit particular because we had three paragraphs of the Nicaragua judgment of the ICJ in 1986. And our subject was discuss those three paragraphs. It was not about commenting it. So we were not asked to make a commentary of what the court said. We had to identify what the biggest underlying question was, answer that question using what the judgment said to criticize it, or just, you know, explaining what we agreed with the court on that topic. So that's when I thought, well, what I realized 3 weeks prior when I sat the 1 hour exam, which was I need to be flexible, actually really is what I need, being flexible. So what I did is really, you know, trying to adapt to what was asked of me, not try to do what I thought would have been asked of me on the basis of the past papers. And I approached it in a very French way, because we have a method in French international public law. That is, you know, you have to organize your thoughts in two parts and two subparts. So once I identified what the big question was, I identified what the two underlying questions were, and I, you know, just tackled them. And one thing which is very practical is that you have 5 hours, but you also have five pages. And they provide you at the academy with a laptop that is obviously disconnected from the internet. And you just have, you know, a Word document in front of you. The front is set up, the interline is set up as well. So you don't have a choice, you know, you have to fit all of your thoughts on those five pages. And so I thought, you know, I have two parts, two subparts, which basically makes four parts. So I'll just make one page by part for my thoughts and one page for the introduction, and that will be it. And it was actually intense, but doable in 5 hours.
Super interesting. Madeline, to what extent did your experience differ, or was it similar, or anything else you thought? And of course, your strategy, because, you know, everyone comes with a different strategy, I suppose. So over to you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So one thing I would definitely say is that the being flexible and going back to the basics approach really 100% also applied to my own experience. I did not expect the kind of question that we ended up getting. It was a quote from one of the prior general courses from, I believe, the 80s by Professor Lagarde. And it was this, I mean, it was a quote from a specific course, but it was also, again, a very, very broad question. So you're only going to be able to tackle this question by going back to the basics and even understanding what it's trying to say, and then structure your answer. So I was also very, very adamant about structuring my own paper. The only thing that I would add that really helped me in that challenge and that format of writing an essay was that I thought, okay, this is an essay format. I'm not trying to solve a legal case or anything. So I have room for my own ideas. So my goal was to make my argument and then be as opinionated and strong about it and convincing as I could. So in my first paragraph, I adopted a stance about how I interpreted this quote or what I thought of it, if I agreed with it or not, which I believe was also one of the questions that they added underneath the quote. And then I just used those five pages to be as convincing and strong as I could. And I sort of discovered some different levels, different ways that I could point out my sort of strong traits and my line of argument, and I used everything that I could. So I think an essay is really a great format to do that. So And when I spoke to the professors later, they said that that was what convinced them, that they thought I really had this one clear thesis that, of course, in the end of my essay, I also took back up, and that's what did the trick. Yeah.
Thanks, Madeline. So I suppose we've cleared the day one mock exam and we've cleared the written exam. So we'll move to the oral exam. And Madeline, could you give us a sense of who the jury members are, how long the oral exam is? Is there a set of formalized questions, or is there only one question like the written exam? And sort of how you went about the entire thing, and if you could just give a broad sense, and then your strategy as well on how you tackled it.
Sure. So the way it goes is, I believe you sit for the written exam at the beginning of the week, I want to say Monday or Tuesday, and then they correct it, and then you hear back. Everybody gathers into a room, but not just the directed studies people and the people who sat for the exam, but so many people, and it's really stressful. And then they let you know who are the nominees who are allowed to sit for the oral exam. And of course, it's all anonymous, so they don't know which person wrote the essay. I mean, maybe they have a guess, but they don't know. And so when I learned that my essay was selected for the oral exam, it was mine and one from the French section, so only two. And I was really surprised. So I knew, okay, I mean, obviously I was gonna sit for the written exam, so there's a possibility, and I gave it my best, but there were so many incredible people, I didn't necessarily expect it. And then the person from the French section had to go first. So he had to it's by a lottery that you just pull out a subject of some of the ideas that they put into a box, and you make your own fortune. And so while he took out his subject, I had to leave the room. And then once he was done, I had to pull out mine. And then I had half an hour to prepare, I believe. And then they call you back in. And the question that I got was something very, very broad. And in the beginning, once I pulled it out, I did not immediately know what to do with that. So it was kind of, you know, that feeling where your gut just sinks. And because I knew I was going to have to do the oral exam, not only in front of those four distinguished international law scholars, but also my whole cohort, you know, anyone who would fit into that room. So it's like, I don't know, maybe you will remember, Cecile, but something like 40 people sitting behind me whom I didn't necessarily know. So it's, you know, a little intimidating in the beginning. But so I tried to, you know, focus on myself, and you go to a different room to prepare. You have this half an hour. And the way I went about it was I, again, tried to structure it. My question that I got was a yes or no question. So the idea I had to go about this was, I was going to go in and say, well, my quick answer is yes, but I'm going to follow this up with more arguments. So when I said that, they were very relieved that I didn't just leave it at that. And again, I sort of distributed it into different parts and tried to also, you know, pick up some of the things that I had learned during those 3 weeks, because this is really essential. The four people sitting in front of you are Professor Thuvenin, the Secretary General, the professor who does the general course. So for me, that was Professor Davout. Then the two professors from the directed studies. So one of whom you will know, the other one of whom you might not necessarily know very well. And also bear in mind, you know, Professor Thuvenin is a public international lawyer mostly. I mean, of course, he does both a little bit, but just by training, he is a public international law leading scholar. So I also tried to be mindful of that. And in answering my question, I tried to highlight some of the aspects that might also have to do with that, which, of course, he jumped on and took up. And so, but what I'm trying to say is be prepared to also get questions from the very edges of your field that you feel comfortable with. And so you have, I think you have half an hour to prepare this, this question that you then have to answer. And then you have to answer it in something like 10 minutes, if I remember correctly. And so I went in and then, gave my presentation, and then the rest of the time, which is something like, I don't remember the exact time limits, but Cecile, you may be firm on that, something like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, the rest is like questions. And those are not at all confined to the presentation that you just gave. It's going to be really anything, and also not confined by the classes taught. So I was really surprised and challenged by some of the questions that I got. And the way I approached them was, again, I did not immediately know some of the answers, but I tried to work with what I did know. So whenever I would get a question that I felt a little, you know, okay, I don't know the answer to this immediately, I tried to show them my thought process in as best as I could. And I tried to show, okay, so it could either be A or B, and what speaks in favor of A, but really what, you know, it has to be this way, but then this speaks in favor of this, and this is why I would suggest X, Y, and Z. So that's how I went about it. And afterwards, I tried to be confident, because it's, you know, the whole setup is scary. You're sitting in front of four people. There, again, there's several people behind you. It's intimidating. But I really tried to tell myself, okay, focus on those four people sitting in front of you. When someone asked me a question, I would focus on that person, of course, to also speak to the others as well. But just really try to make the whole situation smaller for me. And then I think what really did the trick, or what helped me succeed in that moment, was that later, once I found out that I got it and my professors came to congratulate me, they even said to me that one of the things that convinced them and one of the reasons I got the diploma was that maybe they, in some of the answers I gave, they had a different opinion. But it was always in the mechanics of my answers that they could tell that I had a legally sound, prepared answer that really demonstrated that from the way I went about it, it demonstrated that I had those skills and that background knowledge in a broader sense to tackle these questions. So I would also take away the pressure from thinking, oh, I don't know what they think about this. I don't know how they feel about this. It doesn't matter. If you stick to your own opinion and you're equipped to answer it in a legally sound manner, then you're good to go.
Thanks, Madeline, for letting us in on your strategy in a very comprehensive way, but also painting such a great visual picture of what the atmosphere looks like during and on the day of the exam. It sounds quite intimidating. So, Cecile, over to you and your strategy and any particular bits about public international law that you might want to share.
Indeed, the exam is 30 minutes preparation, 30 minutes oral exam. And I remember, because it's an exam, so obviously you have not only, I mean, you have to be flexible and come in with a free spirit, but you also need to analyze what they're waiting for in that exam room. And I remember thinking to myself that the purpose of that oral exam was to make sure that on one topic you could have, you know, points of reference in every field and subfields of your, I mean, specialty in international law. And so my topic, I actually picked, it was written terrorism on on the sheet of paper I picked. And I remember sitting in that exam room and just thinking, well, in international law, you have different subfields, international human rights law, international public law, international humanitarian law. And I just thought how the question of terrorism, you know, comes in those different subfields. And by looking at those different angles, I actually came up, as Madeline said, with a thesis that I presented, which was actually very simple, and I remember it to this day, because my thesis was that the state has a right to be protected against terrorism, but that does not imply for the state a right to attack terrorists directly and to deny the rights of the terrorists. So in that way, I did something which was approximately what terrorism, how terrorism manifests in international public law in the first part, and why in what it implies for terrorists in international humanitarian law and human rights law in the second part. And I do believe that coming in with a thesis that is clear, with an answer that you give to support that thesis in a structured way, helps the jury see that you actually went through all the different subfields and you thought about the question that was given to you in a very general way, and that's actually what they want. And then for the questions, I remember being a bit surprised because, you know, coming in with that mindset of what they expect is just seeing that you kind of have different points of references in all the subfields of international law, I thought that they would then ask me questions about the fields I did not touch upon, like international, the law of the sea, for example, but they did not. And that actually surprised me because I spent the 20 minutes remaining answering questions about terrorism. And that was actually very surprising because I thought, well, if they asked me so many questions, it's because they were not convinced about what I said, or they did not understand, or I missed points. And I really thought that it was a bad thing. So I actually was kind of distraught when I came out of the room, I have to say. But then I realized when talking to the professors afterwards, it just was that they understood what I was saying, but they just felt like 20 minutes was not enough, and that we could, you know, bring things further and just discuss more about the things. And so I remember that two things came to my mind. The first one was not letting yourself being impressed by the impressions you have of what image you give to your jury, because then you can basically lose all of your ability to answer questions if you start thinking that they ask those questions because they do not believe that you have the potential to succeed. And the second thing is to not let yourself being impressed by the questions in themselves, because I remember Professor Tubnar has given me a question, and it was a very general question, but at the time, the context of in international relations were kind of peculiar, because we were at the very start of the war between Ukraine and Russia. And basically the question of Professor Tubnar was very general, but when you had the context in mind, the question was just, are Ukrainians who resist the Russian aggression, are they terrorists? And I remember at the time, not only being surrounded by 40 people, but, you know, realizing how tricky a question it was. And as Madeline said, I took time to just think about what I would answer. I remember that it felt like ages, and maybe it must have been only a few seconds. But I do believe when you have questions that are asked during the exam, and you can be impressed by this question or completely surprised and not know what answer, but taking the time of finding a sound answer is actually crucial to, you know, as Madeline said, put forward a thesis not only that is reasonable, but that you actually believe in, because they might not let you go with that answer. They may just continue on and ask you answer and asking you things about what you just said.
Thanks, Cecile, for the answer, and apologies for that awkward pause. I could not find the mute button. The the beauty of podcasting on Zoom, I suppose. And now moving to the conclusion, and I'll hand it off to you one by one to sort of conclude and give your final words, any final thoughts, including, of course, any benefits that you received in terms of your career by having obtained the diploma, in addition to, of course, the prestige, which we all know is of course always there. So we'll start off with Madeline and then over to Cecile.
Sure. So I think for me, the very huge benefit, first and foremost, that has been such a validation of my own sort of private international law skills that I had acquired. And I also talked to some of the people that I met at the Hague Academy about this. They said, let this be a lesson that you can be confident about the skills that you have acquired. And they sort of just said, this really demonstrates something, and you can take this and take it back home with you and sort of look back on this experience and be proud of yourself, which obviously I really was at the time, and I in a way I still am. It was an incredible feeling to know that you made it this far and that there were so many talented, skilled people who were there, who tried, and that they selected you. Of course, that's an incredible feeling. And to this day, it was one of the happiest days of my life because it was so filled with emotions and ecstasy, and I don't know, it's just a lot of fun and a really big moment. And the other major benefit, I mean, apart from just getting that validation, would be that, as you mentioned, other people know what it takes, and I hadn't been fully aware of that until I went to the Hague Academy. I obviously admired people who had gotten the diploma in the past or who had even just gotten nominated, and I knew what it entailed. But my own firsthand experiences of, for example, meeting people at a conference and them knowing that I had done that and knowing what that meant has been incredibly helpful and just a really, really great experience for me. And it has helped my career a lot so far, and I hope that it will continue to do so. But I think that's pretty much it.
And Cecile?
I completely agree with Madeline. Confidence in yourself is basically, I believe, the main thing that you can take out of it. But I'm not sure it's the only one. I believe that there is also a thing of, because Madeline and I are doing PhDs, and doing PhD can be a lonely thing to do. And basically losing confidence in yourself is one of the main, things you might encounter. But because it's a very lonely thing to do as well, just, taking part in the courses outside of getting the diploma or not, actually brings you confidence, because not only you meet people who do the same thing as you, PhD students, those who've done their PhD already, who do research on a daily basis, and just exchanging with those people just makes you realize that you're not the only one having interested in a topic in particular. Madeline and I were talking before the podcast about the role of the judge in international law, and we kind of realized that we had some similar research interests, and that is actually, I think, the main benefits of the courses. And that helps not only gaining confidence in the fact that your work is worth something, but also in the fact that you have kind of a support system, because the friends you make there are actually the ones you're going to be working with for the future years. I met some PhD students who I'm still in contact with and who I'm still working with. Obviously getting the diploma has the impact that some people know who you are now and they might have not known you if it was not the case. So it's not so much about the recognition that you get. Obviously you get recognition, but it's more that you expand the network of people you're going to be working with, and it just helps you enjoy your research a bit more.
Thank you, Cecile and Madeline, for such an in-depth discussion and for taking the time to join us on the podcast. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We'll see you in the next episode.